And we are back. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio, solid conservative and just plain right. Man, covering down on some major ground across the southeast U.S. of A. Y'all have talked about this show. Whew. Goes from Huntsville back on over to Chattanooga. From Tuscaloosa back on over to Gadsden. All the way down to that loveliest little town on the plains we like to call Auburn, stretching across the border to what we now recall Fort Benning. And then just big old patches of North Georgia and Mississippi thrown in for good measure. I saved it to the end, by the way. Final four. There. I said it.
Let's wait. I can't wait till I won't say that. I'm not gonna jinx it.
Just celebrate, man. It's an Alabama.
Why? It's not my team.
Celebrate.
It's not my team though. Celebrate.
Okay, listen. We're gonna do a thing we call JP on Sports. You incorrigible young Alabama fan. All right. So JP on Sports every single week. JP, by the way, has one of his own. One of our podcasts is JP's podcast called Out of Right Field. Mixes conservative content with sports. Does a great job at that. But every week on Fridays, we do a quick segment to talk about what we're heading into the weekend with and what we may have just seen in the world of sports, and we call it, and he's got a sound effect for it, JP on Sports.
JP on Sports!
As his groupies do a sound effect.
Hey, you know, they are from Auburn. So,
and they are indeed Auburn sorority girls.
So,
I guess. Would love to hear you say in your smooth, silky voice, War Eagle. Anyway, we do a thing called JP on Sports in two phases. So round one is called the three and out. He gives us the top three stories he believes are out there in the world of sports. And then we switch to the second round and call it the two-minute warning. And that's where run two-minute segments with a timer and a buzzer. Three and out. Go, brother.
So first, obviously, the main story of the sports world, the Final Four is this weekend. We got Auburn, Florida, Saturday night, 6 o'clock, and then you got Duke, Houston after that. And it's the first time since 2008 that all four of the number one seeds made the Final Four. So there was not as much madness. But, I mean, if you love to see the best teams all year play at the end, then you got what you wanted because these were the four best teams all year. Like I said earlier, I think Florida and Auburn will be a much better and closer game. Even though Florida at Auburn, won pretty handily, I think Auburn is on a roll. They got some momentum, and they now have film on, you know, how that game went, maybe some stuff to tweak and fix in that game to not, you know, have the same result. I don't know. I don't know if it's because, they knocked my team out, but I think Duke, I don't see anybody beating Duke right now. Duke is just... They got Cooper Flagg, who won AP Player of the Year today. They got Knepel. They know how to win, and their style of play is one. I mean, we saw Duke and Auburn already play. It was close in Cameron, but I don't know who's going to beat Duke right now, and I don't think Houston's going to have much of a shot against Duke this weekend. So I think Florida-Auburn will be the best game out of that. But who knows? You know, we could see Auburn go out and jump on them early. We saw Florida was down against Texas Tech big and had to come back and, you know, claw back to victory there. So I have no idea what to expect other than the fact I think Florida and Auburn will be the game of the weekend.
And it's just cool to watch this. I mean, and I love what you said a moment ago about all four of the number one seeds. I mean, that sounds like the system is working the way it's supposed to work. You know it?
Yeah.
And it doesn't always.
Yeah.
And you can always have upsets. But this feels like the system actually worked. And you kind of wish that the NCAA football playoffs could get it this good.
Well, so, yeah, there were still upsets. You know, you had Arkansas beat number two St. John's. And then you had McNeese State knock off Clemson. They beat the 5-seed Clemson. So there were upsets. I've seen a lot of people talking about how the four number one seeds shows that NIL is making the gap too big. I'm not ready to jump on that yet because we haven't had as much of a sample size yet, and we did see upsets. So I think this was a year where the top teams were just the gap between the top teams and everybody else was just too big. And, you know, and I actually would argue that NIL would cause more upsets because, you know, the talent is more spread out. I get the argument that, you know, teams like Duke and, Auburn, the top teams, they can snag the best players from the mid-major programs. But also, the top five recruits out of high school that struggle at those programs and then go back down to mid-major. Now you got a five-star level guy in a mid-major program. So I'm not buying into the argument that, you know, NIL is ruining all the madness and upsets. I think we, you know, take some time before making that argument. But
yeah, and I won't jump into your time frame here too much, but I would say that if the NIL was all of it, then we would see Texas, Georgia, some of the other major legacy programs who have NIL dominance in football being able to do the same thing in basketball, and they're not.
Yeah, so I think this was just a year, like I said, I mean, the top teams were just really, really, really good. And we saw, I mean, teams like Auburn brought back so many of their guys from last year, so they got experience. And then, I mean, Cooper Flagg is going to be the number one pick, and he's just a stud athlete. And on top of experienced guys coming back, it was just kind of the perfect storm of just the top teams were just really, really good. So,
all right, three and out, that's one.
So the next, we got to talk about the Braves, okay? Because
oh, no.
It may be time to sound the alarms a little bit here. The Braves are off to an 0-7 start to start the year. And outside of just the games, it may be one of the most unlucky starts to a season that I've seen in a long time from any team, because the Braves had one major acquisition in free agency, one big acquisition, and that was Yerkes and Profar, all-star outfielder from the Padres. And like I said, the only big move they really made. After the first opening series, Yerkes and Profar is now serving an 80-game suspension for PEDs. He busted positive for steroids. And he will be able to come back in July, I think, or either June or July. But if the Braves make the playoffs, then he cannot play in the playoffs as part of his punishment there.
For those that don't know, PEDs are performance enhancing drugs. Yeah.
And also, Hernandez, Baseball Hernandez, was one of the Braves' best pitcher, now out for 60 days. He injured his shoulder. It's sort of like the snowball is going here. You know, you're losing games. You lost one of your best guys for steroids, and then you lost another one of your best pitchers for injury. And Acuna and Strider, who are two of the best players in the league, they still got like six more weeks before they both come back from injuries they sustained last year. So it's a struggle fest. Tonight, the Braves have their, you know, home opener, hopefully to turn things around. But a team has never, ever made the playoffs after starting 0-7. So the Braves would have to be the first to do that.
Is this the Braves' worst opening start?
In a long time. So I think the Braves went 0-6 or 0-5 in 2016 or 2015. But yeah, it's definitely up there. I think it's safe to say the worst from the standpoint of a lot of people had the Braves winning the World Series preseason. And now they're starting off 0-7. Granted, they had a rough start to the year in terms of they had to go to the Padres and to the Dodgers, which are two really, really good teams, the defending World Series champ, the Dodgers. So they're not playing cupcakes, but with a team as good of a lineup and, you know, good a team as the Braves, 0-7 is not good. And, you know, the whole offseason, Anthopoulos, who is one of the, if not the best GMs in baseball, he's a great job at getting players for cheap and then turning them into something good. There's been a lot of talk about apparently this offseason he was really handcuffed by the ownership to not spend money to get guys. And
oh, wow.
It's looking like the bullpen is just in a really, really bad spot. So we'll see. Like I said, this is still a great lineup. You're still getting two of your best guys in Acuna and Strider from injury later on. But 0-7, yikes. It's not a great start for the Braves.
I don't know the answer to this. Can they do midseason trades?
Yeah, so the trade deadline is around All-Star, which is around midseason. So, yeah, you got about till midseason to make some trades, yeah. We'll see. I mean, it's like I said, it's too good of a team to stay like this for too long. Who knows? Maybe they'll bounce back even hotter than, you know, like even better than how bad they started and they go on a run. Who knows? But I don't know. It's not looking great.
All right, that's two. What's three?
So I saw some people, you know, saying they wanted to hear about the UFL, which is the alternate professional football league. their first games were last weekend.
Once again.
Yeah. And the Birmingham Stallions, for y'all who aren't aware, is a mid-level, or I guess, what would you call it, like alternate pro football team. The Birmingham Stallions, they, I think, went back-to-back, maybe back-to-back-to-back, if I remember correctly, for the UFL. So we got a powerhouse of a pro football team in Alabama, if y'all weren't aware. And so we got the UFL kicking back off. The Stallions dropped their first game 0-1 against the Defenders, the D.C. Defenders, 11-18. But they got a game tonight at 7 against the Michigan Panthers up in Detroit, if y'all want to check that out. But if y'all haven't checked into the UFL, they got a lot of funky rules, but they also got a lot of cool stuff. Like, the players and coaches are mic'd up, So you can hear like the coaches' play calls and stuff. The refs have cameras on their hats, so you get a closer look at things. They also have an option where you can go for three, or it's like I think you start at like the 20, and you can go for three into the end zone instead of a field goal. You know, you score, you have a extra point, 2 point. There's also a 3 point conversion you can try in there. So there's a lot of cool rules in there that makes it more fun and fan friendly than the NFL. So if y'all haven't checked out the UFL, you need to check it out. And I mean, it helps when you got Birmingham as the powerhouse team in the UFL, which is pretty funny to me. But yeah, I can't remember who it was, but people were texting wanting to hear about the UFL. So I may have to keep up with the UFL this NFL offseason. Got to get my football fixed somewhere.
Exactly. It's funny, too. There have been multiple – we talked about this last week – multiple iterations of an alternate to a non-NFL pro football. And they've always had a Birmingham team, and it's always been the best team.
Yeah.
The Stallions – I think there was one called the Vulcans. There was another one, I think, called the Birmingham All-Americans. Mm-hmm. And just, you know, it just dates.
Well, I think what's funny is that, you know, Alabama and Auburn have had a lot of college studs that didn't quite make it to the NFL. And the first season for the Birmingham Stallions, they had Bo Scarborough, who was a stud running back at Alabama, go, and he was a stud at the Birmingham Stallions. So it's like the Bama and Auburn guys who didn't quite make it well in the NFL are coming back home to play for the Birmingham Stallions. And then also AJ McCarron plays for the St. Louis Battlehawks. He won the MVP last year for them, so he's still kicking around and playing football in the UFL, doing well. So yeah, it's fun. Like I said, college football is not here. NFL is not here. Why not watch football? It's good football on TV.
And they have cool names.
They do have cool names.
Battlehawks.
You know, the Rock owns one team. It's the San Antonio Brahma Bulls, I think it is. Because the XFL and the UFL merged to make a league. So yeah, a lot of great fun team names in there as well.
All right, very cool. Three and out. There you go. We're going to come right back and we switch into the 2 minute warning. I've got a timer and a buzzer. And he goes 2 minutes at a time on any number of things, all things related to sports and or sports culture. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Y'all stay tuned. More JP on sports right after this. And we are back. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Solid conservative, just plain right. Just, I mean, like, man, making common sense like a superpower. Pulling pins on truth grenades. That's right, giving you all the truth you can slap on a bumper sticker. All right, bulletproof influence. What else can I say? All right, let's go back to it. JP on sports, round number two. We call this one the two-minute warning. This is where he's got a series of 2 minutes to go into whatever he wants to about sports, and I've got the timer and the buzzer. Go, man.
So first, I don't know if you've seen this. The Yankees have introduced these torpedo bats.
Yes.
So they started off the year, and they noticed that the barrel on the Yankees bats were like twice the size as normal. And apparently they had an MIT, you know, professor go in, and he was able to actually shift some wood from the handle that you don't use. It's not really needed, and was able to morph the bat and shift the wood to the barrel. So you're not adding any more wood. You're just moving wood where, you know, it's in the handle, moving it to the barrel. And my first reaction was, there's absolutely no way that that's legal. And I think that was everybody's reaction to that.
Yeah, that's my first thought.
However, the torpedo bats are still within regulation of, they're still within the size that's required for an MLB bat. So it's fair game. And actually, I did mention this earlier, but the Braves have actually placed an order for some torpedo bats themselves.
No kidding, really?
Yeah, to try to maybe turn some things around. But I don't know. In this, the age where steroids aren't allowed and, you know, obviously more home runs is going to do better numbers for baseball, but that's just amazing to me that the Yankees were able to figure out a way to make the barrels bigger. Leave it to the Yankees to figure out a way to do that.
There's always going to be somebody that finds that new inner, you know, like, you know, you can look back to Richard Petty getting his car banned because it was too fast at NASCAR. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, somebody's going to find out a way.
Yeah, it's I didn't even know that was possible to morph it to where, you know, you move wood from the handle all the way to, I mean, they figured it out, so props to them. But I saw some pitcher put out a statement or something where he was asked in an interview and said, well, it's the Yankees, so MLB is going to be okay with it. It's like, it's not wrong.
But we got 20 seconds left. Mm-hmm. So they're making a difference. Like they're putting more distance on the ball.
Yeah. The Yankees have set a record. So they, one game they had back to back to back home runs. And then the next inning, the first batter had a home run.
Good
so
Lord.
That's four home runs and then two innings. So yes.
And there it is. All right. Reset. That's crazy story.
I know. That's nuts.
I love that. Okay. Go ahead and play. Go.
All right. So there's been a lot of talk about Bama's QB battle and they're in spring practice. And, you know, I've said, you know, Auburn's got their QB. They went in the portal, found him. So there's really no stories from Auburn spring training to go into. They did, yeah. So, but Bama, on the other hand, they got to replace their QB with Jalen Milroe. And the Keelan Russell came in, the highest Bama recruit ever. Battling against Ty Simpson, who is a fifth year coming back. He's waited his time as a backup this whole time. So people were kind of waiting on bated breath, you know, the first kind of story to figure out where things were in the QB battle. Former Alabama quarterback Greg McElroy, who is now in the media world for SEC Network, has his own radio show as well, put out like an article saying from what he's seeing and what he's hearing, this job is pretty much Ty Simpson's already during spring ball. And, you know, I would have guessed that this would be Ty Simpson's job to lose, but now we pretty much have confirmation from somebody in the media who's in the know and seen it that Ty Simpson's, you know, starting to distance himself from Keelan Russell and Austin Mack in this QB battle. So it looks like Ty Simpson will be the guy this year for Alabama. Bar, you know, knock on wood, nothing crazy happens during spring ball, and he's not able to. But it in a world of NIL and the transfer portal, and it would have been so easy for Ty Simpson to go anywhere else. I mean, this is a four-star rated quarterback, a top-rated recruit out of high school, had to sit behind Bryce Young and Jalen Milroe at Alabama. He could have gone anywhere and been a starter right away, but yet he waited his time and, you know, put in the hard work in the background while being a backup. And now he's getting his time to in his turn to be the Bama starting quarterback. And so I think that's just a success story. In the world, we don't see many players do that at all. It looks like, you know, the amount of time Ty Simpson waited will pay off for him right now. So there's still some time in spring ball, like I said, but as of right now, it looks like Ty Simpson will be the guy for Bama this year.
Wow. There he goes. Oh, right on the buzzer. All right, stop the clock. Reset. Go.
So I wasn't even aware of this story, but you brought it up, and this is something I got to talk about. I've looked on Twitter real quick. So apparently there's a USA fencer, Stephanie Turner, who had to go up against a male in a fencing tournament, and instead of going up against him, decided to take a knee and pretty much forfeit against the, you know, obviously she's not going to go up against him. I mean, that's a sport of fencing. That's dangerous. You know, going up against somebody, that's a physical, you know, sport.
Longer reach, everything.
Literally every advantage up against her. And she went on Fox News and, you know, said there's nothing for me and everything for him. You know, she's got all to lose. And, I mean, he's got every advantage in this. But USA Fencing, they put out a for show statement. But then they said, while we understand there are a range of perspectives, USA Fencing will continue to engage in respectful research-based dialogue and review as policy evolves, and said hate speech or targeted hate of any kind is not acceptable.
What does that even mean? Person.
I don't know. It's
such gibberish.
It's condoning it without saying we condone it. And it's, you know what, they talked about research-based dialogue. How about the research of a guy going up against a girl is an unfair advantage? How about that for research?
How about last year he competed as a guy?
Yes. It's so that, and the hate speech or targeted hate, God forbid we say anything mean about the guy going up against girls, but if the guy would have injured the girl and put her out of competition, nothing would have been said.
No.
Nothing would have been said from USA Fencing for that. But what she did, I think it took a lot of bravery. And in a world where, unfortunately, you know, the congressmen and folks who are making the laws are not willing to protect these girls, and they voted against Tuberville's Protect Women and Girls Act. I mean, they're going to have to protect themselves, apparently. So props to her.
Well, you are right at the buzzer, and the music's already playing.
There it is.
Great story. Great job. JP on sports. Coming up next, hour number 3, and we're going to kick it off with Butters and Lee. Y'all stay tuned. We'll be right back.